It's Sunday morning. Time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoor Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm going to start off this morning where I mentioned last week I would pick up, and that is a subject of the Everglades and what's going on in South Florida. And I've just returned from several days of meetings with the individuals involved with trying to save the Everglades and what's going to happen in South Florida if the Everglades, in fact, continue to go dry. So I'm going to throw a number at you. In 1900, it was estimated there were 550 people in Miami-Dade County. 1900, 550 people estimated in all of Miami-Dade County. In 1950, the estimation was 516, so call it 500,000 people in 1950 were estimated to be living in Miami-Dade County. In 2024, 3 million. So 1900, 500 people. By the way, that's about the same number of people that were in Chicago when Chicago was founded in 1835. But 500 people in Miami-Dade County, 1900. 3 million people in Miami-Dade County alone today. Over 20 million people in Florida. Whereas Florida itself in 1900 had a population of a few hundred thousand, and most of them were living in the north because there was no way to get to South Florida. So we wonder why we have a problem with the Everglades. Not only that, the Everglades is a river. That's what people don't, most individuals don't understand. They think it's a swamp. It's actually a river. It's a river of grass, and it's a river that flows underground, and it starts way up in Georgia and the Carolinas. So think of the number of people that have moved to the Carolinas and to southeast Georgia and all the way down Florida since 1900. It's tens of millions of people. Every one of us is putting a straw in the ground, if you will, to take drinking water out, water for agricultural, water for industrial use. So the underground rivers that have gone since millennia from the southeastern part of the United States underground through North Florida till they finally hit the river of grass, Lake Okeechobee, and then filter all the way down through the Everglades into Florida Bay, they're being choked off. They're being dried up. We don't see it because they're underground, but we are taking the water out of the aquifers. Go up to Lake Wells up in North Florida, where I was last week, and you have these incredible springs, all of northeastern Florida. That whole area is full of springs that are bubbling out of the ground from this underground aquifer. Many of them go back underground again till they hit Lake Okeechobee and just work their way to the Everglades. So part of the problem with the Everglades is very simple. Too many people taking too much water from too many states. That is not going to change. So the fundamental situation with the Everglades is there's not enough water getting to the Everglades to stop the salt water intrusion, also to stop subsidence. Then you put on top of that, aside from the tens of millions of people, and remember this number again, 500 people in Miami area 125 years ago, to over 3 million today. But that's really not, Miami is not where the water for the Everglades is largely getting taken from. It's getting taken further up, all the way up the ecosystem, up the southern half of the eastern coast. So then, of course, you get into big ag, and in the case of Florida, you get into what's affectionately known or not affectionately known, depending on your viewpoint, as big sugar. And the sugar industry has taken enormous amounts of water out of what would have once gone to the Everglades, and it's taken directly through the Port Lucie inlet to the east and out towards the west, north of Naples, into the Gulf. So the Everglades fundamentally is being starved of water. The second problem with the Everglades is that it's being the water that's getting there is often full of phosphorus and nitrogen loads from the agricultural as well as human elements that are taking place further north. So in the Everglades, you have a system where there really is very little clean water making it, which is why you have these enormous algae blooms taking place in Florida Bay and elsewhere in the Everglades, because the water coming into the Everglades is not pristine. The water coming in has been impacted heavily by human and industrial and agricultural use. So you have this, in a way, you have this toxic mix of water coming to the Everglades, and you have so much less fresh water coming to the Everglades that the toxicity of the water is ever increased. That, in a couple of minutes, is really what's happening. A scientist could take days and weeks, maybe even years, to describe that. So I'm not pretending to be a scientist. I'm just telling you, and as I have learned myself over the years, that's the fundamental problem with the Everglades. Not enough water getting there, and the water that's getting there is highly polluted. So what are we going to do about it? And that's the purpose of why I was in South Florida last week. What are we going to do about it is we are going to try to bring about a great deal more water getting to the Everglades through the creation of reservoirs, and these reservoirs are supposed to enable the pesticides and chemicals to get out of the water, to leach out of it, so when the water comes down into the Everglades, it's a lot cleaner. This is a huge undertaking. It's billions and billions of dollars to create these reservoirs and to create this new plumbing system. Without this new plumbing system, there will be no Everglades. It is going to continue to dry up, and as less water comes in, it's the same thing with the Gulf of Mexico and the Louisiana Marsh. Only in this case, it's not sedimentation. There, it's sedimentation. Here, as less water comes in, salt water intrudes because the fresh water is not pushing the salt water out. So you have a system where rising sea levels bringing more salt water into Florida Bay and the Everglades, and you're not getting the amount of fresh water coming down into the Everglades to push the salt water back. So the salt water is ever increasing, and you have subsidence, and you have sea level rise. It's an enormous challenge, but there are, at this point in time, there are not only as the state of Florida, but the U.S. government organizations like the Everglades Foundation leading the way to try to stop or reverse what has taken place over the last, particularly the last 75 years, but really also the last 50 with this enormous population growth. If we're not successful, the Everglades is going to go away. And when the Everglades goes away, it dries up. And when the Everglades dries up, you've lost this absolutely magnificent ecosystem, but you also now have much of Florida that's going to be exposed to fire because all of this is drying up. On top of that, of course, we have the ecological issues with the Everglades, the python that's moved in, invasive species. And so the ecosystem in the Everglades is rapidly changing with invasive species. The public enemy number one right now is the python. The state of Florida and the U.S. government through the Fish and Wildlife Service are making a full-scale effort about to be announced to how they're going to try to rid the Florida Everglades of the python, or South Florida the python. It's doubtful they can ever permanently now rid South Florida the python, and the python is taking down things like deer. I mean, you can't believe the damage the python is doing to the ecosystem. But there's going to be a real attempt to dramatically reduce the python populations through creating a commercial market, through creating simply an effort to eliminate them. It absolutely has to be done. But all of this is for naught if we cannot get more water to the Everglades and more clean water to the Everglades. And the efforts of the Everglades Foundation in doing so on the ground are among the leading efforts. There are others, but it's probably the most impactful privately financed group working with the federal government. So in the coming years, we're going to learn a lot more about this. Finally, all the energy that's needed is focused through Governor Ron DeSantis and others in Florida. It's a big story, and so many of us in Illinois enjoy Florida in the winter. And when we turn on that tap water or we do things, think about that's water that, when you're in Florida, is not getting to the Everglades. It's the water it needs. I'll be back in just a moment with much more on the great outdoors. And what I'm going to do, come back, I'm going to talk a bit about sunsetting provisions that are environmental regulations, a very interesting story. Thanks for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter here, your host. Before I entirely leave the subject of the Everglades for this week, the question will come up, why are we just now getting around to this? And the answer is, these things take a long time to marinate. The science of the Everglades has been known for quite a while, but the political will to save the Everglades is really now just coming into immersion in the sense of so many people coming on board, from the state of Florida to the federal government to the private sector. And agriculture and industry has to work with conservation and people. It's a big alliance, but the energy is finally there. And I have to say, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, he has been absolutely fantastic in ramping up the funding and ramping up the dialogue to save the Everglades, not to mention the fact that there's a coming IMAX giant screen film, Treasures of the Everglades, that will also draw a lot of attention to this. More to come on that in the future. I want to talk for a moment about the sunsetting of environmental regulations. Recently, an executive order was issued by the Trump administration focused on the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, Department of Agriculture, and other agencies that talked about the need to automatically sunset all regulations by October of 2026, so call it 18 months from now, and that at that point in time, only regulations that had been renewed would be in place, and the time limit for these regulations would be 5 years. It's fraught with legal challenges, but think of the idea. We have now a century or more of, particularly 50 years or more, of environmental regulations that have been put in place. There are thousands, tens of thousands of them. The Environmental Protection Agency lives off them, the Corps of Engineers, Department of Agriculture. These thousands of regulations are never reviewed, not updated, and I don't believe any ever sunset. So I think what the president and his administration are doing is an interesting discussion. I'm not going to weigh in on the legal elements. I have no idea. But it's the discussion of how do we review, and you do this in business every day, how do you review your practices to make sure that you have current practices that are best practices and are necessary. And so what I know about this is that the intent is to say, let's review all the environmental regulations that we have, all of them, and let's determine which of them are contemporary and necessary. And I guess in the way the federal government works, he is trying to set a sunset for the ending, basically, of all environmental regulations. Not a good idea at all. But he is also saying that there will be regulations that need to go forward. So this is going to be extremely complicated. But the notion that we are going to review the past 75 years or so of ever-accumulating regulations is a great idea. How this gets done, I'm not sure that I can begin to figure out how they're going to do it. But you can be absolutely certain of this. It's going to end up in the courts. And it's going to clog up the system, and it's going to be challenged, and it'll get delayed. But it's an idea that many have been furthering for a long time, particularly in agriculture as situations change. We need environmental regulations to protect the environment. We need environmental regulations so that people know the rules on which we're playing by. But this morass of thousands, tens of thousands of regulations that have accumulated probably can be cleaned up. So that's what's going on in this idea of sunsetting provisions. I would tell you on the air today, there's absolutely no way in the world, it is not going to happen, that in October 2026, we are not going to have any regulations pertaining to the environment and to the use of our water and air and things like that. That is not going to happen. What we're probably going to have is the beginning of a cleaning up regulation of regulations, and that's really, I think, a pretty good idea. In the time we have left, a couple minutes, the Pittman-Robertson Act and the North American Wetlands Conservation Act, there continues to be momentum to reauthorize the using of interest of funds on the funds in the Pittman-Robertson Act, the interest on those funds that accumulates before they're expended to go over to the North American Wetlands Conservation Act, which, of course, is the greatest, and I say, I shouldn't say, of course, it is the single most important enterprise to save North American wetlands, the North American Wetlands Conservation Act, the Fish and Wildlife Service, Department of Interior, Ducks Unlimited, they are the primary drivers of it. And if the Pittman-Robertson interest on those monies can come over to help fund that, all the better. When we look at all the changes being taking place in Washington right now and the efforts to downsize the government, and everyone has their favorite entity that shouldn't be cut. One of my favorite entities is the North American Wetlands Conservation Act. It is the most important element in place to bring the private sector and the public sector together to save our wetlands and to manage them for the future of birds, water, air quality. So we'll see what happens there, but the interest is hopefully coming over, and hopefully the North American Wetlands Conservation Act, I'm sure it'll be downsized to some extent. Maybe it'll be made more efficient, but it's an act that we absolutely need to have as we continue to try to save our wetlands in North America. And as I wind down the show, a look ahead to next week, I'm going to talk about salmon and drugs in our water system, chemicals in our water system, and what it means to salmon and also to other fish. It's a story that's just beginning to be understood, but it also goes to talk about what we're drinking in our water, and I'm not going to be a fearmonger or anything, but definitely our water, the chemistry of our water that we're drinking and that fish are living in is certainly changing. Also, I'm going to talk about the Illinois Department of Natural Resources Advisory Board. I did a show on this a couple weeks ago. I had an enormous amount of feedback. I want to drill down a little bit deeper as to even if it can be saved, is it worth saving? So those are some of the things I'll talk about next week. In the meantime, I hope you have a great week in the great outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of America, 720. WGN.